We want to start the meeting and call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. With thanks for everyone for accommodating us on a beautiful Saturday morning. A couple of announcements before we start. If you'd be so kind as to turn off your cell phones, not just on vibrate, but turn them off, so they do not interfere with the electronics. That would be very helpful. Keeping in mind of what the purpose of Ways and Means again is to have the budget balance and come back through and make sure that the bills that come back through are within the target, so we're dealing with fiscal matters. Again, I want to thank Mary Liz Holberg and the lead Republican in our conversations to try to keep amendments again to the fiscal concerns, and we appreciate that. We have in your packets the minutes from April 13th. Representative Greiling, I'm sure that you studied these.
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes.
Very good. Representative Greiling moves the minutes of April 13th, 2007. Corrections? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. The first bill up then, Representative Greiling, is House File 6. Members, should be in your packet. This is a combination of the K through 12 and the early education bill. So we have at the table both Representative Greiling and her counterpart, Slavik. The spreadsheet should be in your packet as well. And I think, is there one amendment that's in your packet? Is that correct? But that is not yours. Is that correct, Representative?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It's not
okay.
Mine.
Why don't we then go through the bill. First of all, Representative Greiling, you were given a target, both you and Representative Slavik. I need to ask the question, are you within your target?
Mr. Chair, members, we are within our target.
Mr. Chair, we are too.
Okay. When you say within, does that mean right exactly dollar on?
You betcha.
Mr. Chair, we're a little bit lower than our target.
Okay. Well, you did. You got a balance of zero. Our fiscal analyst is zero. That's all. That's good work. So Representative Greiling, just very briefly, if you'd like to indicate what's in your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, and I would mention that perhaps Representative Mariani will be joining us as well because the policy committee work is also in this bill. And then we have our wonderful staff behind us that can help as well if we have hard questions. As members know, our goal was to have a quality education for all students, so we believe we've done that with the 3% increase on the formula. We wanted to address the achievement gap, so we have many components of this bill that do that, including a good start on paying the special ed cross subsidy and then property tax relief. Since this is the committee that is focusing on the fiscal aspects of the bill, if you look on your spreadsheet on page 5, you can see some of the big picture numbers that affect this bill. Perhaps Representative Slavik will want to comment on the early childhood part, but for the general, the education K-12 finance part, we are, well, actually now we have the bills combined, so I guess we have to talk about them together. We are spending $184,589 more than the governor's bill. The total bill, the K-12 bill, was a 9.2% increase from the last biennium. Now combined, the bills are 9.4% increase, and bringing the general fund amount being spent on the E-12 budget at close to $14 billion. It's listed there in the center between the two boxes on page 5, $13,940,494,000. And I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you want much more than that, maybe Ms. Representative Flawick wants to comment on the early childhood portion of the bill.
Representative Flawick.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and it's good to be part of Representative Greiling's bill. We're a small part of it. Some of our brief highlights are our bill makes smart investments in the early achievement gap. That was our main goal. What you'll see in this bill restores funding to Head Start, School Readiness, and ECFE, which are proven programs to help kids get ready for school. And this bill also provides for two scholarship programs. Both target low-income, at-risk families. One program will be in two rural communities, a pilot of scholarship-type programs. The other program is the Governor's Scholarship Program for $2.5 million, which will be administered by the Department of Education. And just briefly, we also have ABE funding in this bill, GED funding, and after-school community grants, and also some innovative ideas. As far as the Governor's numbers, we came in $11 million under the Governor's numbers, and overall $50 million under. Primarily, the difference was in the scholarship programs.
Dave, questions? Do you want to deal with amendments first? But I have just one amendment before me. It's a amendment 1B. I don't know who wants to offer this. Mary Lou?
Here, this is my amendment, and relates to the English proficiency program, and the prior policy was that additional funding would be available for 5 years. The policy behind that was that 5 years of good programming should result in a level of proficiency that wouldn't require extra funding. The bill currently doesn't have a limit, and so this would limit it at 7 years and take the excess revenue and put it in the gifted and talented funding program. And the reason for this is that I believe that there should be some finite number of years, because where's the incentive to get it done? If there is no number of years of funding, then there really isn't incentive, because the longer you keep these kids in the program, the longer you get additional money.
Representative Holberg, you want to formally move the amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holberg moves amendment labeled TSHRDHF6, Amendment 1B. It's before us. Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holberg and members, I would oppose the amendment. That we did have a 5-year cap up until we changed it by taking off the cap in this bill, and there really isn't any research to show that such a short time is sufficient for students to be doing the in-depth work that we expect of them in schools today. In fact, there's research that shows that many more years are really needed for that. But we thought every student is different. Some students can master English proficiency in a shorter amount of time. And so to put some kind of artificial number, assuming that all kids are factory kids and take the same amount of time, is meaningless. The money that school districts get does not incent them to keep kids in limited English proficiency. They churn them in and out as fast as they can, because there are so many ways for students to spend their time during the day that if they already know English, they do not want to sit and struggle with others who are learning English when they could be taking enrichment classes and that sort of thing. So what we also did in this, when we changed this, Representative Holberg, which you may not know because you don't serve on education, we took out the concentration factor, which actually then spreads this money around the state a lot more, and that was kind of the quid pro quo with doing it that way. And we think this is a fairer way, since we do already have a concentration factor on the compensatory funding, to get that there's kids all around the state that do not speak English. As far as the gifted and talented, I join you in being very much an advocate for that. I have an award in my office for my work on that, and now this year we have Representative Swales, who's been our champion, and she has succeeded in getting mucho dollars in this bill already for gifted and talented. We've increased the the Representative Huntley, what is going through your mind? That's a good advice, y'all. I know.
I'm thinking of another ad.
That I used earlier that I'm not going to repeat now. But we have four extra dollars per pupil. Representative Hahn just told us.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, I won't repeat what you
said. That's our secret. Four more dollars per pupil going from 9 to 13, and then there's all his own money that was also proposed by the governor that we joined the governor in supporting, having more rigor in our high schools with advanced placement, international baccalaureate, and college in the schools program. So we think we're well covered there, and would therefore urge members for all these reasons to vote against this amendment.
Okay, any other discussion, Representative Holbrook?
Mr. Chair, I just think, again, that 7 years is long enough to have these kids in these programs, and I agree that gifted and talented programs, I mean, the sky's the limit for the kids in these programs, and if there's money there, it'll get put to good use, and I'd like a roll call vote on the amendment, please.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Mariani.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, I'll be very brief, and I want to apologize for being late. Apparently what's been going around this week finally caught up with me last night and this morning. Just very briefly, I heard Representative Bradley speak on this issue. The research tells us that 5 is absolutely not the wrong cap if you're going to have a cap at all. What we heard from districts all over the state, quite frankly, is that there's a huge cross-subsidy, in essence, that's going on because they're committed to these students to get them well-educated. And for some students, depending on where they're coming from, you know, if they're coming from home places where, frankly, they haven't had a formal education system, it's going to take more than 7 years. Some students, it'll take less than 5 years. And so the idea here is to give that flexibility to school districts and really stop asking them to cross-subsidize the education for students over 5 or 7 years just simply because we put a cap on.
Any other discussion? Roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Solberg?
No.
Abler? Reinert?
No.
Carlson?
No.
Clark?
No.
Bean?
Yes.
Beacon?
No.
Earhart? Greiling?
No.
Gunther?
Yes.
Hillstrom?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Holberg?
Yes.
Huntley?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Kelleher? Lencheski? Mariani?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Murphy Aaron?
No.
Murphy Mary? Osmond?
Yes.
Paulson?
Aye.
Pulowski?
Yes.
Sertich?
No.
Smith?
Yes.
Swigum?
Yes.
Swales?
Yes.
Shumper?
We've had two people that have asked to excuse Shumper and Mary Murphy to notify that formally because they are been sick as well. They got the bug. There being 10 A's and 13 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Holbrook, I don't have any more amendments in front of me. Do you have any more?
Mr. Chair, we don't have any more amendments for the K-12,
okay,
but we've got a couple on state government finance, but we do have some questions.
Sure. Okay. Don't have any other amendments. Representative Holbrook?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Greiling, my understanding is that your caucus is supporting an income tax increase and that all of it is going into property tax reduction. Is the total swap out, if you will, included in your bill, in that every penny of the income tax increase is dedicated to school property tax relief?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holbrook, there is $125 million of the property tax relief in this bill. As you know, the school levies are tied to property taxes with aid and levy. and we are equalizing a lot of the operating capital, the debt service, and the levy referendum by through this bill, which then means that there are less property taxes. So there is a portion of that in this bill.
Okay.
Representative Holbrook.
And then could you delineate the levies and the amount that you allow to be increased without voter approval, the discretionary levies in this bill?
Representative
Grady. Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, the increased levy in this bill, counterbalancing that $125 million reduction, is state school levy, which we are allowing school districts at their discretion to increase up to $3 per pupil. And then school districts that are in intermediates may increase their levy up to $10 per pupil. Again, it's all for state school allowable uses in the statute, and we're adding in an allowable use for that funding school support staff and preventative measures for things like suicide and school shootings and the like.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, then it's my understanding, and from watching the newspapers in my local community, there's a whole slew of levies that school boards currently can use without voter approval. The latest one in my area was the integration aid levy. We have lease levy. I don't know how they're funding an ice arena without voter approval. I don't know what levy you call that one. Are there any caps or any controls on those levies that the locals approve and cause property taxes to go up?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, the school districts, cities and counties, of course, can levy at their own discretion. They don't have the kind of constraints that school districts do. The levies that school districts are allowed by state statute to levy, 70% of them, the bond referendums and the levy referendums, have to go to the voter approval. Their other 30%, which would include the ones that you listed and others, are at the discretion of the school district. Some of them the state equalizes, and some of them we do not.
All right, and Mr. Chair, the governor's been really, really clear that he's not going to support an income tax increase. And so in looking at your bill, if you lose the $125 million that you attribute to the income tax increase, where would you see that you would need to cut your spending in this bill?
Representative Grayling, you don't have to always answer hypotheticals. You know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, I am hoping and praying that the governor will see the light, or five Republicans will see the light. And I would take either one.
And I think my mother used to say to me, if wishes were horses, then beggars would ride. So.
Well, we all might be riding, if you never can tell. Representative Holbrook. Representative
Swigum. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Holbrook, I'm amazed and shocked at your line of questioning and your tying of the tax increase to property tax relief in this bill. I will tell you what the priority is. The tax increase is necessary for the $2 million of padding that we passed in the House floor to the Metro Transit community. For the per diem and housing increase of legislators, for the 19% increase in the welfare bill, for the 106% increase in child care, for the 12% increase in the Attorney General's office. I could go on and on and on, but you're connecting the wrong dots, Representative Holder, just so you understand, and I'm sure you do. Representative Growling, if I could, I'd like to ask a couple questions about your bill, because there are a couple things I don't understand. And by the way, congratulations on your award in your office. I have a few in my boxes, too, and as I went back and looked at them when I was changing rooms, I had to change rooms, as you know, this year, and had all these boxes full of awards and plaques, and I found out as I went through them, as long as I'm willing to give people's money away, somebody gives me an award. That's kind of a neat thing, you know. I give away somebody else's money, and the person who gets the money gets the award.
Representative Slagum, I didn't think you ever wanted to give anybody's money away. Yeah. Anybody. I'm surprised you had any awards. Representative Slagum, additionally, we found something else out this morning with Representative Greiling. You know, she is now in the office where Representative Seifert used to be. And she indicated that there was a mouse in her house. So I don't know if there's one that's left over that hasn't moved yet or not. Representative Swigum, I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt.
No, Mr. Interrupt. You, it's a very, very good comment. So the way it looks right now, by the way, you wouldn't believe how balanced I am, Mr. Chairman, but the way it looks right now, the Democratic floors of the 4th and 5th floor get the bug and we get the mice. That's the way it's working. Madam Chair, or Mr. Chairman, Madam Greiling Chair, I'm interested in this one provision in here as we get to the formula. And you have $500,000 in here for a location equity revenue as it changes the formula and tweaks it one way or another. And I realize you have $500,000, and I think the Senate has some significant number more than that.
Meaning that if it's in both bills, there's going to be something coming forward in the location equity revenue at the end of the conference committee that takes place before the bill is vetoed. I'm interested in what that location equity index is, how that revenue is used, and who it moves revenue to and from and why. If you could explain the location equity revenue to me, I'd appreciate it.
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Swinger, first of all, I will say that the bug was started, at least in the Education Finance Committee, by Representative Grotlo. He was sick as a dog before Easter, and after that, it spread around to the Democrats. So. And then I will also say another footnote before I get to the real answer. The award that I have in my office for gifted and talented work was for, which is like a lot of awards in my office, for nice try, but no cigar. I don't think I got them a dime, but I worked on it mightily at one time. And so anyway, awards don't always end up because you got people money. They're often for trying as well. But as far as the Location Equity Index, that's represented John Benson's bill. I'm a co-author of it. I support it strongly. And it is another equity formula, which we have many in the Education Finance Bill, for trying to achieve equity around the school, around the state for our students. As you know, in our state constitution, we're required to have an equitable education finance system so that students, wherever they live, have a good education, not contingent upon property wealth or what their parents and other adults in their community choose to do in terms of voting patterns. And I've worried that we've gotten a little bit skewed when we rely so heavily on optional property tax votes in terms of equity, and I think we're in danger of getting into the courts again if we don't rectify that and have our state funding do better and not so much reliance on the whim of voters for property tax increases. But in the study that was done, the Governor Pawlenty started it two years ago, it was continued last year by the education advocacy groups at their own expense, and now we're commissioning through this bill a part three study of it where we would hopefully finish it up with legislative involvement, where we're looking at what is a fair funding system for the students around the state. The draft that the PS Minnesota, Public School Minnesota report had included a cost differential factor because they said that we really need about $200 million more in the metro area to be fair because wages are so much higher in the metro area for school staff and also housing is so much higher, and that's part of why wages are higher. The average teacher salary in your area, Representative Swigum, is about $23,000, and in the metro area you'd have to double that just for the not starting wages but average wages. And that means that in order to put a teacher in a classroom, you have to spend more in the metro area than in greater Minnesota. So to have things that are accounted for equitably already in our bill, we have transportation sparsity, we have debt service, we have the levy equity funding mostly goes to greater Minnesota. The library funding that we have in this bill mostly goes to greater Minnesota. We have a lot of things that mostly go to greater Minnesota. So we have this bill is actually focuses first on our core cities where they have needs, and we have need-based formulas. The next area to benefit is Greater Minnesota. The last area to benefit are the suburbs, particularly the outer ring suburbs. And so the Location Equity Index is a placeholder in this bill to get the discussion going in anticipation of our report that we hope to have finished up next year, in which case I think you'll see a larger price tag on this component, and every metro legislator would be wise to support it. And so therefore, it's not a partisan issue at all. It's a equity issue for the metro area. I believe this, unless you know more than I do, Rep. Swigum, and I haven't read the Senate bill yet, I've just seen a synopsis, I believe they just have a further study of this issue. I don't think they actually have funding for the actual index, but if they do, I'd be thrilled.
Representative Freeman, follow up.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Growling, I am disappointed to hear your response. Tremendously disappointed. What you are doing with this Location Equity Index is you're making sure that my teachers in rural Minnesota and everybody else's teachers in rural Minnesota, my students in rural Minnesota, are second-class citizens. You are building in an inequity that will be there forever in the formula, rewarding some over others in a second-class, first-class way. And it is absolutely wrong. We had this discussion. I think Representative Huntley and I had a discussion in a, maybe it was a finance committee with Representative Earhart one evening. I think Representative Huntley, you were there. Representative Growling, you are doing the absolute wrong thing from the standpoint of equity in the state of Minnesota. This bill goes the wrong direction. The local equity revenue goes the wrong direction. Representative Grant, I couldn't be more disappointed in a provision than this provision itself. You seem to indicate that because you said the average salary in my area was $23,000?
Representative, maybe it was 26, but we had the figure in our committee, and it was about a 20.
Salary?
That was what we had in the facts in our committee. So we can go back and study it, but that's what I recall.
Representative.
Representative Growling, Mr. Chairman, you better check.
Just a point of clarification, Representative Swigum. I think someone informed me it was the average beginning salary.
Oh, Mr. Chair, okay.
I don't know if that my
I'm not sure.
Here, just thinking my wife was twice as good as average. Maybe she isn't twice as
good. She makes that much money?
She pays our bills. Yes, she does.
Okay.
without question.
Okay, Representative Swigum, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, it helps that you say the average beginning salary, but still, even at that, it's more than $23,000, Representative Growling. You better check the figures a little bit. It's probably more like about 28 or 28.5. But again, this provision, members, builds in inequity, unfairness, second-class citizens of rural Minnesota, and every rural Minnesota member of this committee better look at this and see what's not going to happen here, but into the future, and as we negotiate with the Senate in this bill. Representative Grantley, I think if you look at the Constitution, it doesn't talk about equitable education, does it? Doesn't it talk about uniform education, not equitable?
Mr. Chair, Rep. Swigum, I would hate to think what would happen to Greater Minnesota if we took equity out of our funding formulas.
You don't need to,
Representative Swigum.
Mr. Chairman, because we were the one who put it in there, and I helped get that in there. So, you don't need to worry about that. What do you determine to be equity? Do you think it's equitable that a school district in rural Minnesota gets $4,000 or $5,000 less per child in reimbursement than one in the metropolitan area? Do you see that as being equitable?
Representative,
Mr. Chair, Representative Swigum, I believe that we should have an adequate amount for every single student, regardless of need. And we've been shorting our schools on that, and maybe I'm glad to hear you might agree on that. And then after that, we have a lot of equity-type provisions in our formulas so that if you have this need or that need, you get other types of funding. And some of those benefit Greater Minnesota. Some of those benefit the core cities, and then usually the suburbs are somewhere in the middle.
Well, Madam Mr. Chairman, Representative Greiling, you didn't exactly answer my question. Obviously, you could throw more money at any problem or any system. Everybody's going to be raised a little bit. But the equity here, I'd like to hear, Representative Greiling, Mr. Chairman, your definition of equity and what it is. And is it fair that some students get $5,000, $4,000 less per child for their education than others in the state? Is that fair? Do you want to try to, like, to reduce that equity disparity just a little bit, or do you want to widen it?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think equity boils down to dollar amounts. It boils down to opportunity and access for a good education. And so we're trying to make sure that wherever a student lives, they have an equal shot at a good life, a good job, a good education that will get them there. And so that means we have to spend more in some areas than others on a variety of things. That's what we spend our whole Education Finance Committee deliberating, and the Location Equity Index will be a part of that next year. We'll be debating that hotly, I'm sure, and your comments and concerns are just a preview. But I am sure that within your caucus, every Metro member will support it once they understand it, if they don't right now. And rural members, hopefully, people who are being fair and taking a look at all the components in our formulas for education and a lot of other topics that we discussed, such as transportation, as long as you brought that one up. There are components in there that benefit Greater Minnesota, some at the detriment of the metro area. And that's always our struggle here, is to look at what is fair. And I think we should be looking not at dollars, but at outcomes. If you have bigger needs in Greater Minnesota, we need to give you more money, even if it's more money than we get in the metro area, and vice versa.
Representative Greiling, you and I have a completely different view of what equity is. I understand you're coming from the metro area. I recognize that. I recognize that there are additional needs in some schools over the others. That's why we do have such a complicated formula. And I do recognize that political power at times has tweaked the formula in a power way to help some schools or some geographic areas over others. Coming up with fancy indexes, concentration of compensatory aids, coming up with location equity revenues, in many ways, members, are only ways to tweak the formula to help some rather than others. And I would guess, Representative Greiling, that an effort of mine, and I think many of at least outstate Minnesota, if not many of the suburbs as well, has been trying over the past years to look at the disparity, look at the difference that exists in the funding of schools in the state, and say, you know, there's going to be a difference, folks. I'm never going to tell you that every child is going to get what Minneapolis gets. You know, they win because of the concentration and the compensatory aid. And every child isn't going to get what Hopkins gets because they have the local referendum capabilities. And every child isn't going to get what Red Lake gets because we give them a few extra dollars, a few thousands of extra dollars per child. But you ought to be able to look at that 5th and 95th percentile of schools, Representative Deacon, yours and my schools, and say, let's try to close that gap just a little bit. This $5,000, $4,000 difference is not right. Representative Brown, tell me, do you close that gap just a little bit for us, just to give us a little hope, or do you widen it?
Representative Greiling.
Well, Mr. Chair, it sounds to me like you actually understand this issue very well. You made some arguments just now with the reasons that some districts get a lot more than others very well. And so I appreciate your depth of understanding, which I think belie your other statements. And you know, the reasons that you gave for why some districts get a lot more money is exactly the reason that we have some districts getting $4,000 or $5,000 more than others per pupil. And I think that I will leave it at that with your having answered your own question.
Mr. Chairman, I did not get an answer to my question. I gave a little understanding, a little background, a little face building. But my question, my answer is,
my answer to a question that I want is this gap that exists between the high spending and low spending districts. Let's throw off the top, you know, let's throw off the red lakes because we understand there's a difficult situation there. And let's throw off the bottom schools, you know, for whatever reason. And let's go to that 5th to 95th percentile. Do you widen that gap or do you narrow that gap just a little bit?
Representative
Gray. Mr. Chair, actually, I haven't looked at that 95th percentile gap, but I have been told by the staff that we have a very fair bill in terms of we don't give quite as much, I don't think, to Minneapolis and St. Paul as they've gotten in the past. The suburbs aren't screwed quite so badly by Greater Minnesota.
Dude.
I think the tape will show it was correctly.
Mr. Chair, members, I should never come to the legislature on Saturday. But Mr. Chair and Representative Swigum, seriously, you know, I think you're going to find, and I know that you know more about this than you're claiming, because Representative Sikora carried this very bill for many years, and Representative Erickson, when we had this hearing in education finance, she was just couldn't help herself but laughing and giggling because she said this sounds exactly like what we've been going through in our pockets. And she said she wasn't sure Representative Sharon was ever going to speak to her or somebody again after they had argued over this issue. And I think you probably know that Representative Segrin supports this issue. I suspect the governor will. And this is not a partisan issue. It's a matter of fairness. It's not a question of whether we need the location equity index. We do. It's a question of how much money should be put into it. And quite frankly, originally, we had $10 million slated for this particular topic. If it were fully funded, like I said, the draft report of PS Minnesota said about $200 million. But we put in just $10 million waiting for Representative Marquardt's property tax bill. If it wasn't fair, we were going to fund the location equity index a little more this year. But his committee did such a wonderful job of coming in fairly with the property tax relief for the school funding formulas that we actually then drained that account and put it into, I think we put it into Gifted and Talented that Representative Holbert also supports. But we will be discussing it more next year. You're welcome to come to our committees and try to figure out, you know, the $64,000 question, which is what we always wrestle with. What is fair? What kind of districts need what kind of money? And but in the end, I am sure that the location equity index will be found to be needed. It's just a question of how much.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize.
I will finish now. But Representative Greiland, you were going in the absolute wrong direction.
Representative Eakin, you and I have the same concerns. Representative Pawlowski, you and I have the same concerns. Representative Quilty, you and I have the same concerns. And the bill you have before us right now widens that gap of disparity in the state of Minnesota by $150 between the 5th and the 95th percentile of the schools in the state. They could reimburse for their children in a very fair way that doesn't treat their teachers as second-class citizens, Representative Riley. You widen the gap by $150 per pupil. Yes, you do. And this is a very, very unfair bill from the funding standpoint. Sure, everybody can be happy if you throw more money at a problem. Everybody's going to get a little bit more. But the fact is, it's very inequitable, very unfair in who gets more and who gets less. That gap between the 5th and 95th percentile is widened rather than narrowed. It is absolutely the wrong direction, as is the location equity revenue direction. You might just as well just say second-class citizen, rural, greater Minnesota. You could just as well put that term on it.
I know we've got some other people on the list on this, but staff is always sharp in reviewing things, and there is they've found an error, and it is a fiscal error and a cross-reference. So if we can revert to an oral amendment and call on Mr. Mark to indicate the amendment that I will make to the bill. It's a simple one that can be done orally. Mr. Mark?
Mr. Chair, it's on page 85, line 29. The reference should be to, the cross-reference should be to Section 60 instead of Section 58. It deals with a language that transfers the American Indian Scholarship Program from the Department, and its appropriation from the Department of Education to the Office of Higher Education.
So it is a fiscal matter. So the chair would move the oral amendment, which reads page 58, line 29, delete. I'm sorry, page 85, line 29, delete 58, and insert 60. Any corrections, discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed, and carried. Okay, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Greiling, for years, declining enrollment is something that's plagued where I live and the school districts that are in my district as well as my neighboring districts. And we hear stories like in the last 8 years or so, we've lost 100,000 students in Minnesota. Is that possible?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, we actually are not losing students on a statewide basis. It's some areas like Representative Swales' area are actually growing. So as a net, we're not losing students, but there are certainly areas, and yours may be well be one of them, that are losing students.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you. Representative Greiling, I said in the last 10 years.
Oh, in the last 10 years.
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, I don't know. I wonder if the staff does. Okay. Mr. Chair, I don't feel so bad now, Representative Gunther. The staff doesn't know offhand.
Well, you hear about...
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, you hear about this demographic tsunami or whatever you want to call it, that we have lost 100,000 students, and in the next 7 years, our colleges are going to lose 11% of Minnesota students that are potentially going to their institution. So with 11% fewer students in high school today, which kind of goes with 815,000 to 915,000 10 years ago, about 11%. We're sitting there looking at these students did come from certain places. I'm sure Representative Swales' district is growing. I know in Lakeville they had a year that they failed to count 137 students. It's growing so fast.
Representative Gunther, we had just the opposite. They counted them and they failed to reduce them.
Well,
I think that was a little false.
We certainly, in greater Minnesota, have a lot of problems. There were four school districts, even with, I think, one of the largest increases in 20 years that we had last biennium, 4 and 4. We had four school districts that actually got less because of declining enrollment, fewer pupils. Now, I understand that the concept of paying for students that aren't there is not necessarily a good one either. But is there anything we can do other than eliminate all the rural schools to kind of help that deal? Should we look at potentially in the future changing the formula, the way we fund education completely? Or what should we do to make sure every student in Minnesota gets an equally fine and wonderful education that I know you desperately want them to have?
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, as you may know, 80% of our school districts around the state are actually suffering declining enrollment. It isn't just the greater Minnesota issue. And Minneapolis, you know, is just one of the areas, one of the districts that's losing pupils. And one of the districts I represent, Moundsview, I met with a group of parents this year, and they came up with an idea, finally, they said, that could actually help their type of district. And they didn't realize it was, you know, affecting your type of district, too. They thought that now that I was chair, I could fund declining enrollment for them, and that would be a way for them to get some extra funds. But actually, it's 80% of the districts, and actually our school funding formula, due to some wise legislators earlier, prior to us, have put that into our formula. So it's the adjusted marginal cost pupil unit, and that means that as district enrollment goes down, they get to keep on a phase out some of that money for a time, so it isn't quite such a cliff if they lose a lot of students all at once. And so any time we put money on the formula, which we did this year, 3% and 3%, about $450 million. That is to address that problem. So that is in this bill, and I hope you will support it.
Mr. Representative Gunther.
Representative Greiling, I asked in two school groups of teachers this last year if any one of them understood the formula that they get funded from. Not one teacher out of that whole group, or both those groups, had a clue. It seems to me that if they're going to be dependent on that formula for helping educate their students as well as getting remunerated for their services, that we should at least come up with a formula that people can understand. And I'm sure after all your hard work on this bill, you probably understand the formula, kind of, but I'd like you to figure out the formula for my school district and see how you do. I really think it's time that we stop playing all these games, geographical games and everything else, and come up with an equitable formula for everyone. And I think that can be done.
Representative Sertich.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm glad we're talking about taxes and education today, and listening closely to the comments of Representative Holberg and Representative Swigum. Representative Swigum, you know, throwing money at a problem sounds like a good bumper sticker, but I don't see our schools as being a problem. I actually see them as being the solution and the opportunity. For my constituents, for me in Greater Minnesota, it was my opportunity to do the job I do right now. And so I don't see throwing money at a problem as funding our schools. I see it as the solution for everybody, having that opportunity, that chance at a better life. It's the better life that my great-grandparents came over to this country for and put their kids through school. It was the opportunity. It wasn't the problem. And we can talk about taxes and where the money goes. And Professor Holberg, I think, asked some very pertinent questions about where our new revenue goes, property tax reduction. And then you had a different list. And you may have been in the past a little more intimately involved in developing the House budget, but this year I can tell you facts. We're all entitled to our own opinions, but not our own facts. There's $535 million of property tax reductions, both in this bill and will be in our Ben Lucheski bill. The new revenue from the fourth tier is $433 million. You can shake your head, Representative Swigum, but it's $535 million, almost $500 million over that. Part of it's in this bill. The majority of it will be in Representative Lucheski's bill. So there's actually more money going to property tax reductions than in that fourth tier. I'd love to debate it with you, but it's black and white. It's black and white. And so I hear you talking about rural versus metro and trying to grill Representative Greiling. I didn't hear the same thing when you're hanging your hat on that tax bill a few years ago that you ran around with that gave almost $1 billion of buying down taxes, the majority of it going to the metropolitan area. When we promised our schools that the state was taking over, and then immediately broke that promise the next year. So we can talk about this all we want, but I just wanted to make the point, coming from rural Minnesota, going to a good school in Chisholm, I didn't see it as a problem. I saw it as the solution. And many people see schools as the solution and not the problem.
Representative Paulson's on the list, and Representative Sweet. Representative Paulson.
Well, I don't want to get in this debate. I think was going to respond.
Would you like?
I'm actually on a different section of the bill, Mr.
Representative. Well,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sertich, and other members that happen to be here and are interested, Representative Sertich, first of all, if you go to the tape, I didn't say throw money at a prop. I said at a system. You can change. You can change.
Representative Swigum, can I stop? Can you talk into the tape too? I'm sorry.
Probably wouldn't even be able to hear me.
Well, it was a question whether I wanted to ask you to do that or not.
Representative Swigum, the simple fact of the matter is that with the significant dollars that are available in this biennium, $3 billion of new money, 9.8% of new money, dollars and percentages you've heard for 3 months, if you would set the priorities appropriately, we can fund property tax relief, nursing homes, and education appropriately and adequately. But you can't do it and spend 19% more on welfare. It's where you set your priorities. It's where you set your targets. Representative Perkins, and you have coerced the targets in such a way that you put property tax relief against income tax increases or against FOC tax increases or against gas tax increases or whatever. It doesn't need to be done. It absolutely doesn't need to be done. Now, you may, from your perception, because of the way you set the target, say that, but that's not appropriate, doesn't need to be done. This is income tax increases, it's FOC tax increases, it's sales tax increases, it's gas tax increases for the Attorney General's office, for 19% increase in welfare, for your per diem and year-round housing representative surge, for your per diem, for the transit padding that we've already passed. That's what it's for.
Okay, Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, now we...
I know it was called Perpich for a bit.
Say, now I know on the stage. You actually called me Representative Perpich, which is a great compliment. We have that.
It's an embarrassment.
It actually worked out pretty well. I'm proud of all the Perpiches that came down here at the Capitol. And to clear the record up once again, entitled to our own opinions but not facts, I don't collect any housing. Here's some more facts for you. I know you've offered amendments, rubber stamped the governor's budget, set different priorities. You talk about the governor's budget a lot, and that's what you base a lot of your numbers off of. Here's a number we can base off of with the governor's budget. If we rubber stamp it, whatever he wanted, nonpartisan research say property tax increases of $0.5 billion. That's the wrong priority for me and Minnesotans after the last few years of property tax increases. That's why we felt we wanted to go in the opposite direction. That's also the priorities that were set by the governor and the amendments you bring in forward and the water that you said you wanted to carry for the governor standing shoulder to shoulder with him. Property tax increases of $0.5 billion. We just rubber stamped the governor's budget. That's why we're setting different priorities. That's why we're moving these bills forward to actually reduce property taxes. We just feel it's going the other way. That's the choice we're trying to make here.
Representative Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to actually talk about one section of the bill regarding the world language section of the bill.
Can you give us the page number?
It's actually on page 79, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to thank Representative Mariani and Representative Greiling for working with me and including some, I think, some very important provisions. We're going to see a lot of continued interest among all of our folks in the K-12 community, especially in the area of Mandarin that I've been a little bit involved in. I want to just thank you, first of all, for hearing those bills and including those provisions. I think we're going to see a lot of interest in that. One question and just concern I want to raise, and hopefully you'll look at this as you go forward in your conference committee, and that's the section right in section 54 there for having the commissioner have that world languages state coordinator, hiring that full-time coordinator. I think that's totally appropriate to do that, and I think especially as these pilot programs go forward, there's probably going to be a lot of work effort that's going to have to coordinate a lot of this. The efforts here. One thing I know is it looks like it's not being funded. It has to come out of the department. So I hope you'll just kind of look at that or work with the department as you go forward, because I think we want to make sure that there's adequate resources to have a good person coordinating these efforts. So just something that you're looking forward in the horizon there.
Thank you, Representative Paul. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd also like to just change the topic a little bit. And my questions are for Chair Slawik. Representative Slawik, I'm curious to know, over my short time here, in the 5 years I've been here, every year I have a terrific group of ECFE folks come, and they really share some great stories of the effectiveness of that program. And with the opportunity for us to have more revenue this year, I'm curious to know, that was a priority, how does the money relate that went into this area? And if I understand correctly, some of my question relates to, is now in Representative Huntley's omnibus bill in regards to the daycare where we restore some of the money for daycare reimbursement or whatever we call that. How does it relate? Are we giving more money in Representative Huntley's bill for daycare payments, or is the money going to the ECFE program?
Representative Slawik.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, As you know, this bill does bring together both those parts, and now they've been broken up into the two bills. This bill does a little bit of both. This bill restores funding to Head Start School Readiness and ECFB back to the 2003 level. So there's a good increase for ECFB, brings it back to the $120 level in this bill. In terms of human services and what we do in child care, we also are giving some increases in terms of looking at that waiting list for basic sliding fee, trying to reduce that, looking at the market rate, and we're getting some funding towards getting that market rate percent higher in terms of what we reimburse child care providers. So there's a balance on both sides. The challenge for our committee was looking at the target and splitting it up between the Department of Education needs and the Department of Health and Human Services needs, sort of more ECFB, early childhood, and child care. The thing is, when you get into it philosophically, you realize kids are both in ECFB and in child care, and both are early learning experiences. They're just classified and, of course, funded through different departments.
Representative McNamara.
Well, I just have a follow-up and a comment, and I will just say, so we've restored, so that I understand this right, we've restored the ECFE back to what it was in 2003, not restored to 2003 level funding with inflation. It's just straight dollar for dollar. Is that true?
Representative Swalwick.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, yes.
Okay, and this question may be for Representative Huntley, but I think it was in your committee when it was going through. And maybe I can ask this so I'm referring to it correctly, Representative Swalwick. The payment we give to parents for daycare, what is that program, or it's child care, just so I'm referring to it correctly.
Representative Swalwick.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, the co-pays that the state works with, that's on a sliding fee schedule, so it starts out as low as, and this is in Representative Huntley's bill, or within our part of the bill, starts out as low as $5 and then goes up percentage-wise based on income.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pollock, I was just curious for the name of that program.
It's the CCAP program, the Child Care Assistance Program.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pollock, my point is, if we have a chance to give more money to ECFE or for the child care, we need to give it to ECFE. I will tell you, in my 5 years here, in 2003, I'll remember one conversation I had with a young lady, and she said, you know, Danny, I don't know what we're going to do. My husband and I are going to have to adjust our work schedules. Our child care is going to be cut, and we only make a little over $50,000 a year. We don't know what we're going to do. I hope that we didn't restore money to people making $50,000 a year so they might have to adjust their work schedule at the expense of these people in these ECFE programs that are seeing fantastic results. I thought it was such an innovative idea. I thought of my landscape company, and I thought of all the people I should be making phone calls and letting them know. If you're only making 30, 40 grand a year, you're probably eligible. You know, you and your wife may not have to adjust your work schedule. You could be on the state payroll for your child care. And we have these people in this ECFE program that are doing fantastic things. I just hope, and I someday maybe I'd love to serve on your committee, I just hope we're giving the money to the ECFE-type programs and not restoring people to where they're making 50 grand and getting child care payment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pollock.
Representative McNamara, I appreciate your comments. Our committee sees those as two different types of programs. ECFE is a very important program. It involves parents and kids. So it's a great program from that aspect because parents are really the first teachers of their kids, and we want to make sure that they're involved. But it's once a week, so it's only a couple hours a week. For child care, what we're trying to do is help families become self-sustaining. That's government's role in child care. We really want to get them up and off of any kind of government subsidy on child care so they can get working, get an increase of hopefully in their pay, and that they can cover their child care. So they're kind of two different programs, but I understand your comments. They're kind of two different bailiwicks in terms of child care being a helping families be self-sustaining, and ECFP, parent-child relationships, is set once a week.
Representative McNamara, follow-up?
Well, yeah, a very important one, Mr. Chair. Well, unfortunately, you didn't give me the answer I was hoping. I thought the hope was going to be that, no, we don't want to encourage people making $50,000 a year to be not innovative and think they might stagger their work schedule at the expense of funding ECFE. I mean, we had an opportunity there, I think, to give more money to that program, and it's a fantastic program, unbelievably successful. And those are people that really, some good money spent when these kids are that young. And then, Representative Slawick, just a real quick follow-up. Did we fund the ECFE or the early childhood? The governor had this innovative scholarship type program. And at what percentage of his program, if I'm not mistaken, he had 20-some million in it. And didn't I see that you're funding it at about 10% that level?
Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, our committee looked very carefully at the whole idea of scholarships or allowances for kids, and giving the governor's proposal, and the Senate has a proposal of giving $4,000 scholarship to a family, letting the family choose how to spend that money in child care or quality early childhood experiences. What our committee looked at, and we came out with a mix. We have $2.5 million going to rural communities for a pilot through MELF. We also funded the governor's scholarship program at $2.5 million through the Department of Education. And then the Senate has another way they're funding it, so it has a number of vehicles on the table. The concern here is this program is already being piloted by MELF, the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. They have not come out with their results yet. The early childhood system isn't prepared at this point, from everything and the testimony we've heard, to absorb these $4,000 child allowances or scholarships, to know which are the quality programs, where can people go, whether it's a rural area, a suburban area, urban area. So our viewpoint was it was better to start small and try to see what the successes are, see what the pilots are doing, see how this program's going. When we know there's some demonstrated success, then it's time to come back and make a big investment. But we'd hate to waste the governor's money and put a whole bunch of money out there for this allowance program that a system, frankly, isn't ready to absorb.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Greiling. I'd like to talk a little bit about all-day kindergarten. Some of the schools in my area have all-day K already, Stillwater. Some have optional, and some don't offer it at all. Could you talk a little bit about what your approach was as a goal of achieving all-day K, how this bill shoots towards it, and how much more money would it have cost to get all-day K across the state?
Representative Friday.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, this bill does not do as much as we would have liked with all-day kindergarten, but it does provide funding for all districts all around the state in the second year of the biennium to the tune of 0.86% of a student, and usually consider a student one. And so if we had done the full amount and done it at 1.2, because right now a kindergarten student is 0.6, so we figure that's half day. If we've multiplied that by 2 and done the whole thing, it would have been $320 million. But we are only doing it in the second year, and then for 0.86 of a student, so that makes it up to about $95 million compared to the $320.
Representative Dean. Follow up, or is that
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, and we do fund kids, or some kids are 1.3 and some kids are a little less than one. What is a first grader, what would the cost of a kindergartner be? What would that multiplier be?
Representative Greiling.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative, 1.12. These things juggle around every now and then. I have trouble keeping them in mind, too. It used to be that a elementary student was just a 1, but we've actually moved them up to 1.12.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling. I appreciate the fact that that's not going to be able to achieve all-day K, and it's a step in that direction, but obviously we're not going to be able to come close with that level of of compensation, almost a little over halfway there. I really want to I want to just say thank you for appreciating the fact that the suburban schools, I think the term you used with respect to the funding formula was disadvantaged. Isn't that the term you used in the past? I think it was disadvantaged.
Well, we may have to correct some of her. Representative Dean.
In the past, and I grew up in Roseville, in your area, as you know, and all of my grade school, my junior high, and my high school all closed due to declining enrollment, and as the graph that you showed me here indicates, that was the time period that I was in schools and declining enrollment. I've now moved out to the suburbs. What is now the suburbs, Stillwater area, is also experiencing declining enrollment, as is Matamidi, two school districts in my area. We had, in the last, my first term here, 2005, we had a school in our K-12 budget, we had a 4-4 increase. And when I brought that back to my districts in Stillwater, Matamidi, Washington County area, that was considered inadequate for the needs that we were experiencing. And it was, in fact, triggered some tax increases and property tax increases in the forms of necessary levies. Do you feel that this bill, in its current form for Stillwater, for Matamidi, as I take this back to my district and present it to them, do you feel that this bill, as is currently in its current form, should cause property tax increases because it does not go far enough? Or do you feel that they need to do more to rein in their costs? Or how should I best explain this to my school boards?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, you have so many things I'd like to say, a lot of things. I want to get back to all day kindergarten. And also, I just want to quickly say before I forget, staff has corrected, it's not 1.12 for a third grader elementary student, is 1.15. And I want to talk about your grandfather too, in our that used to live in Roseville before he died last year. But for your question on do I think it will mean that they still have to have property tax increases, or do you mean they will still have to have their current levy referendum if they do?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, in some cases it will be a replacement in existing levy, but from what I understand, the replacement plus the additional 3% will not cover the needs of the districts, and particularly Stillwater, which is looking at laying off a lot of teachers. So I'm wondering if that's a problem with the bill or a problem with the district.
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, I would say it's a problem with the bill because it's a problem all around the state. This is what I would call a very good bill, a very adequate bill, and it's better than we've had for some time in terms of, you know, being, I think it's a really balanced bill. It's balanced for your area and mine and for Minneapolis and St. Paul and greater Minnesota. In fact, Representative Heidgerken complimented me on the bill and said he thinks it's, other than the ag bill, you know, the second favorite bill of your caucus, I think it's a really balanced bill. And we tried really hard for areas like yours as well as others. But unfortunately, districts of the sort that you represent recently have been lobbying for more, I think, more for property tax relief than they have for actual school funding. They have gone heavy on wanting levy referendum equalization, for instance. And I even told Representative Dietrich recently, I said, you know, outering suburbs have to start working on actual funding too, because you can't just have property tax relief and expect that that's going to help the schools unless they can pass levy referendums more easily, and otherwise they were not able to. But property tax relief goes to property tax payers, owners of homes and businesses, and it doesn't go into the classroom. And that's what the outer ring suburbs have actually been, I think, lobbying more heavily on than they have on more funding. So because this bill is first for Minneapolis and St. Paul, second for rural, third for inner ring suburbs, and fourth for outer ring suburbs. So I would suggest that the Location Equity Index, for instance, that Representative Swigum is cautioning against, if he isn't a Metro member, is a part of your solution, and that you should join with all Metro legislators in actually lobbying for some funding as well for your needs, and not just focus so heavily on the property tax reductions, which are important, but they don't go to school. We have in here a 3% increase for schools. That is really just a slight rounding up of the implicit price deflator, which economists tell us is what we have to use for inflationary costs for schools. So it's not a huge infusion of cash to schools. It really just is an inflationary increase. We are only paying a fifth of the special education bill in this bill, and so it's definitely not paying that full cost, which will eat away at the inflationary increase that we've given to schools. So I would say that, you know, they should be very pleased with this bill, but to think it's any kind of a panacea, you know, it really is not. There's also, to represent Gunther's question, the staff has provided us with an enrollment chart, but I would just caution that it's on the back and it's got the actual numbers. Those are adjusted average daily memberships, which aren't actual students. They are the different weightings that Representative Dean was talking about. And then lastly, I just want to tell a little story about Representative Dean. When I was door knocking in Roseville two elections ago, I knocked on the door, and he came to the door. And I was kind of confused because I didn't compute right away that he was, wait, how could he be here in my district when he's a candidate too? But I did have enough presence of mind to think, I don't think I have a vote here. And so I was at a great, beautiful house that we all admire in Roseville. It's out on Lake McCarran's, on the only house, I think, that's just out into the lake like that. And it's a beautiful home. And but Representative Dean was, I don't think you were Representative Dean yet, you were a candidate. And he said, oh, don't worry, you should come in and meet my grandfather. He will really want to meet you because, and I went in and talked to him and found out he's a Democrat. I loved your grandfather.
We probably gave the wrong kind of education in Roseville.
And then, Mr. Chair, finally, I just wanted to make sure that members realize that the funding in this bill for all-day, everyday voluntary kindergarten is sufficient for all districts around the state, not in the first year, but in the second year, to have kindergarten for all students in the state. There is enough funding in here for that that effort. And you have to remember that schools are already funded for the first half of kindergarten. So this is money that will help them do the other half. And all, as long as people can convince their school districts to take advantage of this and families choose to do it, every single student will have a chance to be prepared for first grade and be ready to be reading in kindergarten and so forth. So I'm very proud of that part of the bill. And we will fight hard to keep it in the conference committee.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, actually, Representative Grayling expanded on it with the all-day kindergarten. As many people know, Representative Wales and I have been working on this issue as well as those on the K-12 committee. But in response to Representative Dean, and to expand a little bit on what Representative Grayling just said, I think we have to keep in mind when you say 50% funded, that as Representative Grayling has pointed out, we're starting it in the second year of the biennium. And there are some very good policy reasons for doing that. We did get feedback from some of the school districts that they would probably need some lead time. We're talking about, with that $95 million, hiring additional teachers. There are some space issues that school districts need to prepare for. And so we were being responsive to the feedback that some of us were getting in terms of the need for a little lead time. The other thing I would point out, when we originally started this all-day kindergarten back in the early 90s, we funded 50 sites, and I think when I asked Representative carried the K-12 finance bill, how many sites we had at that point, it was like 80 or 85 statewide. I truly don't know exactly where we are right now. But the point being that we already have 80 or 85 state-funded sites across the state, and you alluded to the fact that maybe some of them are in Stillwater. You couple that with the investment that we've made the second year, and keeping in mind that it is voluntary all-day kindergarten, and we had a study out of Burnsville, and I wish I had that study in my file, but I think the participation rate was about 85% in that Burnsville study. So not everyone will necessarily participate, although interestingly enough, when they did a follow-up question on that, asking parents if they were to revisit that opportunity, then it jumped to 90-some percent said that, looking back, had they made that decision again, they would have participated. But we won't be at 100%. My granddaughter in a different state is actually in an all-day kindergarten program in Kentucky, which is another interesting point. We are in a bit of a catch-up relative to a lot of other states. And in her class, there are four students out of whatever number there were that chose to go half day, but the vast majority chose to go all day. But there will be a few that probably, for whatever reason, choose to go half day.
Representative Hundley?
Mr. Chair, I can't let one remark go by, and that was a remark that the Health and Human Services budget is welfare, and the 19.3% is welfare. Even the governor is no longer talking about welfare health care. If you look at my budget, what most people think of welfare is the cash subsidies for moms and kids. And that's about 1% of the state budget. And so the calling the welfare for people that are in nursing homes, calling that welfare, calling middle-class families that get TEFRA subsidies to take care of their very handicapped children so they don't have to put them in an institution, calling that welfare, calling the help we give to people that have severe disabilities, calling that welfare. With that line of logic, I could say we're supposed to be talking about the education bill. And using Representative Swiggum's logic, then any family that sends a kid to a public school is on welfare.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Branning, I might caution you about that your bill will be able to, every district will be able to have a full-day kindergarten. I think, like those schools that have to build two new elementary schools, they're a humongous kindergarten center in order to accommodate full-day, all-day kindergarten in their district, and they're facing a fourth junior high as a higher priority right now, given what we're facing in our districts. I guess I just caution you about that, because it's certainly not going to work for all districts in the state with no allowances for the space needs. But I have a couple questions, and they relate more to policy, but I am concerned. In the summary on page 8, it talks about educational accountability through the funds the Office of Educational Accountability. And if you go down to the end of that paragraph, it talks about factors like single-parent families, parents' level of education, parents' income level on school outcomes, and the commissioner using that to prepare a report. And if you go to the bill on pages 47 and 48, because when I read this survey, I was concerned that we were going to be spreading private data around again and people not being aware of it. And then when I look at the bill, I don't see the elements of school or of income or parent education levels delineated in the criteria, particularly on page 48, and so I'm wondering, number one, if in fact you are going to make available information regarding parents' level of education and income. Number two, will the parents willingly give that up? Number three, will they have control over who has access to it? And at what point will individually specific information be available to that group?
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, we have the policy committee chair here,
sure.
And Representative Mariani.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, members, and I apologize, Representative Holbrook, I may not have caught your entire question, but I'm told by our council here that the indicators that that you've identified, and this is all part of the report card, the system accountability and statistical adjustments section of that, that's all current language. So we're not creating new indicators for reporting. That this is language that's been sitting on our books for quite a while.
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair and Chair Mariani, how do the schools get this information?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I'm actually not sure how to get that information. I don't know. The question, I don't
know. Is there a staff person that could answer that that's available? And if not, I'm sure that we will...
Oh, and Mr. Chair, we can certainly spend some time on that outside of this committee.
Nice.
I'm just, people know this, I'm concerned with the advent of computers and how, I know in Representative Huntley's bill, we're going to see where they're going to give certain agencies the authority to share information between agencies, and pretty soon it'll be very alarming what government information is all going to be able to be compiled on its citizens in the states. And if we don't watch out for that, somebody's going to wake up 10 years from now and go, oh my gosh, how did we get to where we are now?
Representative Mariani, do you have...
Chair Holberg, you and I share those concerns and certainly follow up with that. I've not heard any issues have been raised with the current collection of data, but let's get the information on that.
Representative Holberg?
And if I might, I do have another question. It's on page 5 of the summary and page 31 of the bill, and it has to do with consent to participate in conferences and receive student data. And under current law, is there anything that prohibits a parent from giving access to information to another adult?
Representative Mariani?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Holberg, I don't know the answer to that either.
Well, Mr. Chair, again, we're putting, you know, all this language, and I would be surprised that if a parent walked into a school office and said, I want so-and-so to attend the student conference on my child, that they would be denied that opportunity.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I'm told by our able and always present legal counsel that, yes, thank goodness, that the answer to that is really based on a consent process. That there are data privacy frameworks that provide the protections, and then, but if a parent provides consent, then the data will be...
Right. And so, Mr. Chair, number one, I don't see the need for this whole section of the bill, because I think our current data practices and that the parent has control of a minor student's records and who has access to them and who has access to conferences, etc. So I don't know why we have this, but if we are going to have it, the component of saying that the individual has to reside with the student makes it more cumbersome than current law, puts up a barrier. If you have a child who has a really good big brother or big sister, for instance, or an uncle or whoever, now we've stated that in order to have this right, you have to live with the student. So I think we're going backwards on this. And again, I don't think you need this, but you might want to look at putting in here that if the student is an adult or an emancipated minor, that they then have these rights and not the parents.
Okay. Any other questions? I think that was a suggestion instead of a...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Swigin?
I'm just going to close by putting about my concerns about the direction of this bill, members, going to increasing disparity between the haves and the have-nots in Minnesota. I think it goes in the wrong direction as far as that is concerned. Obviously, there are more monies for the system. Everybody likes to see more monies, but these monies are also built somewhat upon dollars that are not going to be there, members. They're built upon artificial dollars. And Representative Garland, I think you've done some very, very good things in here. Obviously, I'm concerned about the disparity, about the inequity. Mm-hmm. The location equity revenue is really troubling to me as it moves forward in the future, and I think I've stated my case there. But you know, the basic revenue, I think you'd agree with me that the basic formula goes up 3%, you know, of all school funding, that's probably the most important, is it not? That basic revenue, revenue, and then everything else adds, kind of adds up. Is it the truth?
Representative Grinding.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Swingham, that increasing the formula was my bill. That is House File 6, and I do think that is very important. I think we have to make sure all districts get, as I said earlier, the adequate amount of funding, and then we go for the equitable funding after that, which we have a lot of that in this bill and a good balance of it at that.
Representative Swingham.
That really bothers me even more, Representative Grinding, when you agreed with me that the basic revenue is the most important thing we can do for our school kids. Because as bad as Republicans were the last 2 years in the state investing in education, we increased funding the last 2 years by $182 on the foundation formula in 2005-06. And $191 in 2006-07, $182, $191 specifically, and with those 2 years, this bill does $151 for the first year and $165 for the second year. It does $25 and $32 less on the foundation aid formula that Representative Browning just said was the most important, most fair part of funding schools. It does that much money less than the Republican bills that were terrible investments, represent sir, the last 2 years. I think the case is made.
Representative Grinding.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swingham and members, of course, and always when you have a complicated matter, you have to look at the whole picture. And I do firmly believe that you have to have base funding that's adequate and that everybody gets. But after that, you do have to fund the equity portions, and Representative Swingham has neglected to mention that those portions were actually cut, frozen, capped under Republican leadership and the leadership of Governor Pawlenty. And when you have actual cuts, 185 million of them, to things like after school, summer school, limited English proficiency, eliminating the teacher of color program, and I could go on with things that address the achievement gap, then you have to talk about that as well as what was put on the formula. You can only have the balance and fairness in this bill so all kids have equitable opportunities if you do all those things. And so I wouldn't agree that we should not increase the formula and just do the equitable things, Representative Swingham, but I would also not agree that we should just increase the formula and then cut, freeze, and cap the equitable things, because then you have a growing achievement gap, which we have had under your leadership.
Representative Sturridge?
Roll call, Mr. Chair.
The roll call has been requested. Any other questions? The clerk will take the roll.
Solberg?
Yes.
Abler? Reiner?
Yes.
Carlson?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Deacon?
Yes.
Earhart?
Yes.
Grinding?
Yes.
Gunther? Hillstrom?
Yes.
Hilty?
Yes.
Holberg?
No.
Huntley?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Kelleher?
Yes.
Lencheski?
Yes.
Mariani?
Yes.
McNamara?
Yes.
Murphy Aaron.
Yes.
Mary Murphy.
Excuse.
Dennis Osmond. Paulson.
Aye.
Pulowski.
Yes.
Sertich.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Swigum.
No.
Swales.
Yes.
Shumper excused.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes. Yes.
If I might, I just want to make the point. I voted no today. I'm sorry.
Just announce the vote first, okay?
I'm sorry. I think it passed.
there being 22 A's and 2 nays, the motion does pass.
And Representative Holden. Mr. Chair, if I might, I think we're going to see similar numbers on the floor. And I guess the point I'm going to make is that this is the easy bill to vote for because you don't have to pay for it. I can guarantee you that there are going to be far more votes for the K-12 bill than there are going to be for the tax bill. And I think, you know, my no vote today is I'm not voting for the tax bill. The money ain't going to be there to pay for this bill. And so I'm going to be true to the principle of making sure that you can pay for what you spend.
Yeah. You know, a few years ago, I copyrighted that you can't have it both ways.
So sure, I'm going to make an assumption about you on the tax bill then.
Yeah, you bet. And you were true, you copyrighted, you can't have it both ways. Okay, we have then before us Representative Kahn. Representative Kahn would move House File 90, be recommended to pass and place. I'm sorry, I was reading the wrong number. It's Saturday. Representative Kahn moves that Senate File 1997 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. Representative Kahn, before us, we have members of spreadsheet. You were given a target, Representative Kahn. I will ask you a question. Are you within your target?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. And in fact, we're well below the governor's recommendation to this budget.
But I asked the question, are you within your target? You're at zero. Is that correct, balance?
No, I think we have, we do.
Okay. Representative Kahn, there is an amendment, I believe, in our packet. And it is a fiscal amendment. You want to take that one first? Why don't we take that, because that is a fiscal one. I think it's S199788, is that correct? Yes. Representative Kahn moves S1997A8. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Okay, Representative Kahn, you want to give a very brief description on the fiscal aspects?
Yes, we have direct general fund spending in the bill, going for this biennium, and there are similar things for the tail. Direct general fund spending of $676 million. We have reduced the deputy and assistant commissioners and political appointments. Those are being reduced at the option of the executive branch. We did not specify specific positions of $4,775,000. There's open general fund appropriations of $45,438,000. The general fund expenditure totals of $648,639,000. The general fund revenue gain is $104,161 million, so the net general fund spending is $544,478 million. We're also covering two bills that are moving separately, two bills of Representative Simon, which we thought people wanted a separate vote on, dealing with fair campaign practices and the state election campaign fund. So that gets us to $495,000.
Okay. We have an amendment that's being offered, passed out, S1997A12. My understanding is Representative Dean, is that correct? Representative Dean, would you like to move that amendment?
Yes, Chairman. I'd like to move the A12 amendment.
Representative Dean moves S1997A12. Representative Dean.
Mr. Chairman, members, what this amendment does is it takes the increase in budget for the governor and replicates that to the other constitutional officers at 2.7%. We saw in the bill that there was an inequity from the constitutional officers for the state auditor at 11%, the attorney general at 7.7%, the governor at 2.7%. I guess from reviewing the bill initially, our first question was why the inequity between one of these agencies and another, why not keep them consistent, which is very similar at 2.7% for the governor for some of the increases that we saw with Representative Greiling with the teachers and with their schools. Why should the auditor and the AG be expanding at almost twice that amount? So what this does is it makes them all at the governor's increase, and it takes the extra money, which is a little bit over $5 million, and takes that for an area that we thought really needs to be funded this year, and that's bird flu pandemic preparedness. And so what this does simply is take the extra dollars that are going to go to these agencies and puts that into a pot of money for the Commissioner of Health for the prevention of avian influenza. Pretty simple amendment, and that's it.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and members, I would oppose the amendment. There are a couple of items. First of all, let's say where the increased money is going. One of the points that I've made before in previous committees is that the governor's recommendation for pandemic flu prevention has nothing to do with recent events, where we've seen that there's a grant of $22 million to the University of Minnesota from the federal government. The federal government has designated Minnesota as one of the national centers for avian flu preparation. And as I've said about very many things that have to actually, before I was a legislator, which was a long time ago, and for a little while afterwards, one of the things that I actually worked with was microbial genetic transmission. And if there's one thing I know well, far better than I know anything that I've learned here, is that viruses, bacteria, and so forth do not respect state lines. And so it is a very appropriate federal expense, and we're very pleased that the federal government has recommended this and has recommended the abilities of this state and has made us a head lead in that federal effort to deal with it, which is far more effective than any effort we would ever have on the state level. And I will point out that I guess you've targeted two of the constitutional offices. One of the things, again, is that constitutional offices are constitutionally autonomous by the Constitution, and they get to say what their budget is. Now, the legislature then gets to address that, and if the governor had thought that he needed a higher budget, he should have then proposed that he have a higher level of budget. But what's happened over the past years is that we've had some devastating cuts to other constitutional offices, which we've restored in this bill. For example, let's just deal with the state auditor. The change items request for the state auditor and the total impact on the governor's fund was one of the first ones was a staff retention change item. And this change item simply allows the state auditor to keep their current staff and to continue to provide their services at a basic level. It doesn't create any new positions. And there are offsets to some of the appropriations. And the total impact on the general fund is about $319,000 for the biennium. And if they don't receive this, they'll not be able to do the work that they're statutorily required to perform. And apparently, you know, the governor's office doesn't have the same problem in hiring political appointments as the auditor does in getting into the market for competent auditor type. You know, you have to know how to do things like add and count, and you have to know how to balance and things like that. For those, and it's a very different skill than what is required either for the legislature or for the governor. The second item in the auditor's office is to fund the jobs oversight function that they were given in 2005. And the total impact on the general fund is $370,000 for the biennium, and this will fund one full-time person and one student worker and the necessary training equipment and job space for them. And I think we thought that this was very important rather than either cutting into the job Z programs themselves, to have them supply their own oversight, and to put the oversight where the courts have said it belonged, in the state auditor's office. And most of the increase in funding of the state auditor was entirely funded in a way that we had started 20 years ago, which was saying that the appropriate way to fund this is to take from the total amount of LGA, we take an amount that we had decided that shaving a little bit off that, and the amount is about 0.08%, so less than 0.1%, would help deal with these functions on a statewide basis, which may be across the specific district. Like, for example, a specific program that's been that's been asked for oversight from a whistleblower and so forth. If you charge the local unit of government for that, we might never get those kinds of suggestions of reports to do. And the number hadn't been the number that was in was done about 20 years ago, but a specific number was put in state statute, and that number had never been changed, the number that got taken off the top of LGA. Again, I said equal to 0.08%. And so this is probably, I didn't quite go through all the inflation issues of up to for the past 20 years to find out, but this is probably not more than should have happened had we adjusted it every year. And it shows the problem of putting a specific hard number in the state statute and then having to deal with it. The Attorney General, and you know, as I'm sure you know, the Attorney General is the lead officer for the state of Minnesota, and it requires, and it provides legal representation to over 100 state agencies, offices, and boards. Defends the state of Minnesota in lawsuits and represents the state in federal court. And it has a charge to return, save, and protect taxpayers' dollars. And in fiscal year 2006, for example, the office saved over $400 million in defending claims against the state and returned over $25 million to the state and consumers. It's a service agency, so it's particularly hard hit by budget cuts. And 80% of the Attorney General's budget... Sorry, I thought you wanted an appropriate answer. Anyway, and we were talking about the state equity throughout the state. One of the things the Attorney General's office does is supply a lot of legal help for different cases to the smaller counties in the state. Sorry.
That's okay. Representative Kahn, I didn't start it. Representative... there I did. But mine was a white and his was colored.
Anyway, I'm confident that the Attorney General's office will return more than the amount of the increased appropriations to the general fund of the state in the form of civil penalties and in the form of increased restitution. So I think we're doing very well by this appropriation.
Representative Dean.
Vote against the
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kahn for that very, very comprehensive question, whatever I asked 25 minutes ago. But a couple of things. Number one, I guess I misspoke or mischaracterized it. This does refer to all the constitutional officers, not just the two that I highlighted.
Would you like me to go into sector?
No.
And, Mr. Chairman, I do have a bill that I hope we'll deal with next year that would abolish lieutenant governor, so we would actually get some serious savings in attorney in constitutional offices.
Representative
Dean. I hope
Dean.
You'll join me in that bill.
Representative Dean.
We'll see. The appropriation of $5 million for the avian influenza training and the preparedness, I think I don't have the experience that you do in microbiology, but I do know that that I trust the Commissioner of Health a lot more with those dollars for protecting me from bird flu than I do from the auditor or the Attorney General. I think that is money well spent. This is an area where we need to spend more money. I think from a health committee standpoint, we missed it just a little bit, $20 million down to whatever we've meager amount. $5 million isn't going to get us there either, but it will be a step in the right direction for what we hope will never happen. But that's why I think that this is very appropriate. It's also very appropriate, I think, if we're saddling the governor with larger budgets and less folks to deal with, and he can do that at 2.7%. I think the other constitutional officers should be able to do the same. I guess the question would be for Representative Kahn, how did these numbers come about? Were these just replacements in what you had said was previous cuts, or did you just ask the auditor, did you just ask the Attorney General how much money they need and then fund it?
Well, Chairman, as we did with the governor and as we did with the Department of Administration and every other agency that came before us, we took what their request was and then we asked them to justify it. And we did not increase, I don't think that we increased any of these requests, and we agreed with their justification. And I will point out again that the governor's, and I haven't heard any modifications, but the governor's request for $20 million for avian flu was received before the University of Minnesota got their $22 million grant for avian flu, which was at the beginning of April, was announced at the beginning of April. So I haven't heard what the effect of that is, but as I said, clearly dealing with something which is more appropriately a federal problem, we've been glad to see the federal government's response.
Representative Huntley, will you
continue? Mr. Chair, I just asked for a
roll call. Okay, roll call has been requested. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, where were you last year when the governor wanted $10 million for this and the most that the House Republicans, when you were in charge, would come up with was $1 million? Certainly we need more money in this. I disagree with Representative Kahn. The university got $20 million for a study.
Okay.
This is not a study, what the governor wants. We should put more money in there. But where were you last year?
Representative Swigum?
Mr. Chairman, members, first compliment Representative Huntley for the other evening in using finance, I believe, putting a couple $1 million extra into the preparedness of the pandemic. I think it's very, very important. We're still, in regards to the governor's initiative for this pandemic preparedness, it's still absolutely essential, and we're still underprepared. We're underfunded. Even with the additional Representative Huntley put in the Health and Human Services Bill, we're totally underfunded. Members, what is before you, Representative Dean, and I said it in every presentation in the State Government Finance Division that Representative Kahn did, while she says we determined that they need what they asked for, that wasn't a unilateral determination. Or that was a unilateral determination. It wasn't a uniform determination. It wasn't one that I would agree with and other members of the committee would necessarily agree with. Some would. But Representative Kahn writes the bill and presents the bill. And if I remember correctly, I think that the Secretary of State, the auditor, the Attorney General basically got everything they asked for from a program standpoint. It was Governor Pawlenty's charge and need to have to prepare a budget and send forward a budget, and he thought it would be fair to give everybody that compensation increase of that 2.7%. It seemed reasonable to go across the constitutional officers and do that. Representative Kahn, in her wisdom, saw it as fit only for the governor and not for the other constitutional officers or for the House and Senate itself. I think that is being very, very unfair, and Representative Eaton, you have a wonderful amendment. It sets the right priority for the pandemic preparedness as opposed to the other programs coming forward from the Constitutional Office, which is how be able to live within the same increase of 2.7% that Governor Pawlenty and his office built.
Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I guess maybe I was answered by my question might have been answered, but I was trying to figure out what the $22 million that's going to the U is going to be used for, and I just heard that it was going to be used for a study, which isn't exactly what we're trying to get at here. So I mean, they can study this thing forever, and we need to be prepared when it hits. And if they're going to do basic research to find out what causes avian flu, that isn't going to help us here. So I think the object of Representative Dean's affection here, which is to put more money into prevention and training, it makes sense. And I just think it's a little bit false to keep waving the $22 million to the University of Minnesota. Well, well, all in good intentions. I'm sure that it will find something that will help the matter in the long run, but not if it hits next year. The local folks will need the money to prepare.
Representative Hunt.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry that Representative Huntley is less loyal to his academic roots than I am. I happen to believe that the basic information is very, and it's, you know, it's particularly offensive to have this argument made today, which happens to be Euler's birthday, the 300th anniversary of Euler's birthday, which as a study gave us things like the value of pi, the value of e, and the value of I, which I won't explain now. We can discuss that afterwards. And so I just think that we should appreciate the effort that the U will do to get us.
I didn't think you liked mathematics. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kahn. I just want to make you had a very long answer that was good for me to hear because I don't serve on your committee to Representative Dean, and I just want to pick up on a couple things. It was interesting. You said you want to eliminate the attorney. The lieutenant governor's position, and I'm wondering if we eliminate that position, would that mean under the current situation, our lieutenant governor, who's acting as also as a commissioner of transportation for about $30,000 less than the position would pay? Seems to me that not only are we getting two for one, but we're actually saving $30,000. So I hope at least you don't offer that bill until after it doesn't have effect on the current attorney general so that we can save that money. That's just more, Mr. Chair, was a comment. Then the one I really want to ask, Representative Kahn, I can't believe you actually said this, but I just want to confirm. I want to give you, as Chair Greiling had the chance to You made the statement, and I'm thinking about the person that has four children. One of them, a governor potentially in the future, one a state auditor, one an attorney general, and one a secretary of state. And they all asked for an allowance increase. And one of them asked for 27 cents, one of them asked for $1.15, one asked, I got to put my glasses on, 77 cents. And one asked for $1.36. Now, I only have two children, so I'd have to double them up to envision this. But my goodness gracious, one of them asked for five times as much plus a penny. $1.36 is five times 27 cents. And my wife and I sit down, and your words were, they asked what they needed, and we agreed with their justification. What in the world is going to happen to these four children if one of them can ask for five times as much, and we agree with all their justification, everything they ask for five times as great, one agency asks for five times an increase of the other, and your entire committee couldn't find one thing of any difference? And is it coincidental that the one child leans one way politically, and the other three children lean the other way? Representative Kahn, I'm totally amazed that you would come here and present this bill and say that one of them is five times as much and we agree with their justification. I'm assuming I misunderstood what you said.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, on all of them, we're looking at a return on investment. And we agreed with what those three people said they were going to do with the additional funding that we needed. And we didn't have any, the governor, had he asked for something, had he needed some more money for his office, we would have specifically given him the same degree of attentiveness and we would have given him the same consideration as anyone else.
Representative,
but,
yeah.
You know, I will continue.
Representative McNamara, just one second. Your comment sounds like was kind of like a political ad that for a certain candidate for the Senate fund this last legislative session about something about, wasn't it allowances or something? I can't remember. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but it wasn't... I'm not the one trying to justify five times an increase for somebody else. Representative Kahn, I just think it's important for folks to know just exactly what's going on here and to present it the way it is. And I don't think it takes 20 minutes to answer it. I just think we should call a spade, and I think it's very clear. And I'm disappointed to see us going to this level. I mean, there's a number of other things in this bill, but this is the one that, and I just thank you, Representative Dean, for bringing this forward and to show what is really before us here today.
Okay. Any other discussion? We're about ready to vote.
Last comment, if you show me something specifically that should be removed from the Attorney General's office, some specific job you don't want them to do, some specific thing you don't want the auditor to do, and some specific thing you want the governor to do, I'd be delighted to consider it.
Okay, we have a request for a roll call. I was just about there, Phyllis.
Okay.
Representative Osmond.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think it's important for us to recognize that the dollars that we're talking about are for prevention, and that would be targeted towards training and preparedness are dollars that need to be going to the local levels. If we're trying to, if we have lots of research and that sort of thing that's going on, that's wonderful. If we have stockpiles of vaccine and other activities going on, that's also wonderful. But you have to have people at the local level prepared to deal with this issue as individuals within their communities start to die and become impacted with this horrible potential. And so this is, I don't care where we get the money from, I think this is something that needs to be done.
Representative Holberg,
thank you.
Appreciate your support for this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Kahn, is there something in this bill about that you reduce the assistant commissioners for the governor's office or the reduce his staff load?
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, there is an optional reduction, optional depending on how many they choose to do, of political appointments in the executive branch. As far as I understand, those are not in the governor's office. That's one of the problems that we've had a little bit about whether they're in the governor's office or in agencies, but there is we are looking at a definite carving down of the executive branch.
And Mr. Chair and Chair Kahn, was this something that the governor has control over, these people that he appoints?
Yes.
And Mr. Chair and Chair Kahn, did the governor make this request on behalf of his organization?
I don't recall getting any comment from the governor's office on it at all.
So back to the story of the four kids and the 27 cents, the poor little kid that's respecting the family budget and doesn't want to pay a big burden on his parents. Not only do you give him the 27 cents, but you make sure that he can't see half of his friends moving forward as well. Is that what your plan is?
Representative Kahn.
Chairman, I had really hoped that most of those people being appointed to those positions were appointed because they were desperately needed and brought very good skills into the office they were going into, not that they were friends of the governor. I have never accused the governor of that, and I would hope that it's not true, and I would hope that that's not what you mean to say by your analogy.
Representative Swigum? Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding, and in fact during the discussion I requested some information perhaps for the House floor if this comes up, but one of the shifts in terms of how the governor's office is being budgeted is that the state agencies are picking up some of the costs that historically had been in the governor's office. So there's been a shift there of how some of those positions are paid for. Maybe Representative Kahn can expand on that, but I have asked for some information for the future on that.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I yield to Representative Fulber, who will give a very graphic story about how this is not a political move. He'll tell you how it goes back to the days of when Governor Purpose, good friend Governor Purpose, was governor, and what happened in that case.
Right. Just very quickly, Purpose got mad enough so that when she left, he kicked the desk, had wingtips on, and it hit so hard that he broke his soul on his wingtips. And I don't know how he didn't break his toe, but he didn't. We have the amendment before us. The roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Solberg.
No.
Reinhart.
No.
Carlson.
No.
Clark.
No.
Dean.
Yes.
Eakin.
No.
Earhart.
Yes.
Greiling.
No.
Gunther.
Yes.
Hillstrom.
No.
Kilty.
No.
Holberg.
Yes.
Huntley.
No.
Kahn.
No.
Kelleher.
No.
Lencheski.
No.
Mariani.
No.
McNamara.
Yes.
Murphy Aaron.
No.
Osmond.
Yes.
Paulson.
Aye.
Pulowski.
No.
Sertich.
No.
Smith.
Yes.
Swigum.
Yes.
Swales.
Yes.
Shumper.
Shumper's excused.
Yes, that's correct.
There being 10 ayes and 16 nays, the amendment failed. Is there other amendments? Okay, Representative Swigum.
Mr. Chairman, I will explain the amendment very easily and quickly as it's being passed out, as it just addresses somewhat the same section that we are dealing with the Representative Dean's amendment.
Can you speak up into the mic,
Mr. Chairman? The amendment before you looks at the House and Senate budgets themselves. Our own budgets that deal with our reimbursements, our travels, our per diems, our staff, our housing, whatever it may be, and it brings the same prudence to the House and Senate budget, which I have some familiarity with, having dealt with it over the past 8 years, and in some of those years actually seeing actual reductions in the House and Senate budget, not increases, but actual reductions. It increases the House and Senate budget by the same 2.7% that Governor Pawlenty's office will be increased at 2.7% in the governor's office, as well as what the other constitutional officers should be increased. Obviously, we lost that fight here in the last amendment, but it does take those monies, Mr. Chairman, and provides it to a little bit more of an incentive gratuity for pre-69 TRA members, which is in this bill. Thank you, Representative Kahn, for at least $4 million, if I remember correctly. And about $5 million it sends to the Office of Enterprise Technology for the electronic licensing project to go across agencies within the state, which is really, really important. And again, I'm very surprised that Representative Kahn tremendously underfunds that provision of the governor's initiative. In fact, members, if you look at the bill itself, and this is a little off the amendment, the reason Representative Kahn stated earlier that it's less than what Governor Pawlenty recommended in this area of state government finances, basically two reasons. So one is the underfunding of technology, the Office of Enterprise Technology, and then the very, very significant increase in tax compliance, which is really built upon quicksand. I think it's an additional $51 million over what is anticipated by the governor in his initiative for tax compliance is additional revenue raised in this bill. That's quicksand, folks. It's the spending in this bill is significantly more than Governor Pawlenty recommends with this tax compliance provision, which is really artificial. It is not going to raise those monies. We're pushing this bill forward not only on the quicksand of tax compliance, but the quicksand of non-tax revenue increases, which just simply isn't going to happen as well. So, Mr. Chairman, I move the amendment.
The Representative Swigum moves Amendment S1997A11. Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to divide the amendment between lines 1.5 and 1.6.
The amendment is divided between 1.5 and 1.6. Representative Sertich, you have a request of which one do you want to vote on first?
I'd like to vote on the first part, part of the amendment first.
Okay, the first part has been requested to be voted on first. discussion on the first part of the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the first part of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion is defeated. I believe that takes the second part of the amendment out of balance and is not in order. Other amendments? Or do we have other amendments? Representative Holberg, any
more? Mr. Chair, no.
Okay. Members, we have the bill before us. Representative Kahn renews her motion. The Senate file 1997 be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. Discussion to that?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Holberg.
Just a few comments. Representative Kahn, you're one of my favorite legislators because I think you're pretty crafty. And I admire that in a person. But I many times don't agree with your policies. And in looking at this bill in total, it's a very crafty bill. There's a number of very interesting provisions. I don't think that it has much chance of surviving in whole, nor very many parts of it. I'm really disappointed to see the repeal of the Metropolitan Legislative Oversight Commission. I believe that the Met Council lacks a lot of accountability, and that was just one small measure that we could at least drag them in and have a discussion. And over the years, we've been able to resolve a number of issues that were of concern to our various districts, including Representative Hillstrom's area, and I think it worked pretty successfully. I think that kind of in Representative Sigham's realm of comments, I think the quicker this one gets to the governor so we can veto it and we can get back to a real bill, the better we'll all be.
Any other discussion? If not, renew Representative Kahn's motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
And motion carries.
Thank you.
Members, thank you for putting up with us on a Saturday morning. It's a beautiful day outside. Please enjoy the rest of the weekend. Drive safe. Meeting is adjourned.